Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Mindy Johnson, award-winning author and historian, filmmaker, educator, and musician. And we're talking about her books, Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney's Animation, and Disney Pencils, Pens, and Brushes, A Great Girl's Guide to Disney Animation. Mindy, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you about these books.
Oh, thank you, Mark. It's a joy to be here.
When I opened Ink and Paint, and I've taught animation for many decades, this was a wonderful history. And I have to say, and this may sound odd, this is a wonderful feminist history without being didactic. And I don't know how you managed it, but I was totally absorbed in the, not that I wouldn't be absorbed in the history if it was, but it was like a great history, but it was really from all the women who worked at Disney from their perspective.
Yes, that I had, thank you for that. I had several sort of lines of follow through throughout the book that I, principles that I kept to as I was working on this that evolved through the process, and one of which was that it needed to be told in as many firsthand accounts as possible. This is their story, their herstory, and that was key, that it wasn't my interpretation on anything. It was the opportunity for their stories to be told and to consciously make a choice about the imagery. And you'll note that there are very few men.
I love it. And first of all, it's all photographs most people will never have seen before. So that's refreshing and interesting. And it's all about a phase of life at the Disney Studios that most people are not familiar with, too, because they're in their department before they branch out, and they're doing really interesting things. I also, halfway through your book, you really realize they're doing the heavy lifting of these animations.
They're doing the
work, and they didn't get any of the credit, which is the bottom line of this book that just is really amazing. But you've really given them their due in this book, and I think it's fantastic. Now I want to talk about Pencils, Pens, and Brushes, because that's sort of like the young people's version of the bigger Ink and Paint, right?
Well, actually, it goes beyond Ink and Paint. As I was formulating Ink and Paint, and for the 5+ years that I'd worked on that tiny tome,
we should, for the benefit of the audience, it is an ox stunner.
Yeah. And you'll get a good opportunity.
But it's worth it. It's worth it. There's beautiful photography throughout and color, and
artistry,
it's beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful book.
Yeah. Well, and it spans about 100 years of our collected animated past. And it was clear to me as I was working on this, this is the study of the hand-rendered artistry.
Right.
It brings you up to the digital age. And women were indeed at the forefront of that. But I wanted to, because it isn't largely practiced this way anymore or at this point, so it felt that much more important to encapsulate it, to find as many of these women as we could and to get their voices told and their stories told. And it's still ongoing. And in the course of doing that, I came across some remarkable, just incredible stories that the backstories or what these women accomplished, not only while they were in animation or beyond their time in animation. And it was very inspiring. It was powerful. And yet, as giant as Ink and Paint is, we didn't have room for this. So my editor asked after we finished Ink and Paint, sent that off to be printed. And she said, what's next? And I said, something very light and fluffy, because I needed my mind to settle for a minute. And I said, you know, I really would like to explore these stories further. What about a young reader's volume? But we want to take it a step further with who these women were. So it really is a companion piece that goes beyond Ink and Paint. And though it's designed for young readers, it's really for all ages. It's another timeless treasure, particularly with the stunning, brilliant artistry of Lorelei Bove, her work is just, she's considered by many to be the Mary Blair of today.
I really see that. And I want to get back to the point that this is a book for all ages. I thoroughly enjoyed it in all seriousness. There's a lot of information in here, but Lorelei Beauvais' artwork is just a joy. And it has that sort of real spontaneous, beautiful, and use of color quality that Mary Blair's does. But what a sort of these two books together are just a wonderful history. How did you get, for instance, all the photography that's in ink and paint? That seems like that would have been an enormous job just getting those photographs together.
It was photographs and artwork. And when I went, history, as we may or may not know, is written about, recorded, preserved, and archived from a male perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And to find the artwork, the women, the stories, the families, the materials, it was an undertaking, literally digging under beds and into closets. When I first approached the studio, and I've worked there in different capacities over the years, and I know the wonderful archival teams there. They are brilliant. But it was a surprise for everyone when I went in and I said, I'll need these particular films, key films. We'll need to explore material, and then let's go back to the earliest ledgers of Walter and Roy's earliest studio to find where, since it was such a materials-based aspect of production, let's see where they were getting their materials. And then I'll need everything on the women and ink and paint specifically. Well, I had boxes of things to go through on the films and stacks of ledgers to go to from the very beginning. And I will never forget the sweet archivist's face as he came out and said, this is all we have on ink and paint and the women.
Oh, wow.
And it was a folder that had five pieces of paper in it.
Okay, now, so the next question is where did it all come from?
Right. It was a five-year adventure of archaeological digging in many really crazy and absurd ways. We had to start thinking peripherally. And so we went back to the ledgers and built a bit of a reference list of possible vendors that we could see notated in there. And then we began searching through the collection that they have there via, let's approach it through vendors. And sure enough, up popped a series of folders that was Hazel Sewell's correspondence on, we're trying to do something that's never been done before, a feature-length animated film. When we do a short, we use 13,000 cells. We think it'll run this long. So in doing the math, we think we're going to need 120,000 cells, well, 350,000 cells later, and you see her correspondence of, we've calibrated our paints for blue cast cells, and you've sent us pink cast cells. We need everything you can get us now. I mean, it was sheer panic, because it was unknown. They had never done anything along this line. And here you have the women who, over the course of feature-length animated films and shorts and commercials and every production process at that studio, production could shift and there could be last-minute changes on the animation end, but the women of ink and paint never missed a deadline. And their chain, their time frame would bottleneck tighter and tighter, but they still never missed a deadline with getting the final artistry completed. And what an experience to really examine up close and really look at the artistry of inking and painting. I really wanted to change that myth that it was nothing more than pretty girls who traced in color and colored by number.
Okay, let's.
These women, these women were artists, true, extraordinary, fine artists in their own right. And deserve the credit that is it really is their final mastery we're seeing on screen.
I want to talk. Let's talk a little bit in depth about how cell animation is done, just briefly, to understand what ink and paint does. These are clear acetate cells. Now, the difficult part about painting on these cells, and people have to understand this, is you're essentially painting backwards from the way you would paint a painting. In that, if you have a reflection, you have to put that on first, don't you, and then paint over it
Mm-hmm. Depending on the scene and the work that's being done, absolutely.
It's incredibly a layer, but
you're also working with the fine ink lines, which are applied on the front side of the cell. And then you're working within that ink line, and the paint actually kisses the next color.
Right.
It's not necessarily lapped over. So you're splitting lines as thin as a hair in some of these fine pieces.
These guys, these animators, and by the way, it was a boys' club in the very beginning because they didn't think women could do animation.
But that changed.
But first of all, they're just doing like a couple of, they're doing drawings that need a lot of what's called in-between work. And this is what the women are doing. They're actually making the animation happen. They're doing
quite frequently. Yeah.
And so they're doing all the in-betweens. They're doing the inking. They're doing the paints. And in the case of Disney, the people who worked in the, for instance, the paint department, Mary Weiser, who
correct.
Of the paint lab, they literally invented the science of painting animation.
Yes. In fact, Mary, they were having so many problems very early on that Mary said, you know, we can do better. She had been a fine artist from Chicago. Walt brought her out. He knew her when he was in Chicago, brought her out, and she said, you know, we can do better. So she went and studied chemistry at night, got her degree in chemistry, and then started the first and only paint lab in the world, creating paints exclusively for cell animation. Now, in the early days, they were on nitrate cellulose, which was highly flammable. But she was developing, when they did Flowers and Trees in 1932, which is the first piece of animation to achieve an Academy Award, not so much for the animation, and we love our men with pencils that have erasers, but for the color that these women were developing.
That's right. You know, the
three-strip Technicolor.
You realize the guys aren't putting the color in there.
No, not at all.
And they're doing a drawing and then another drawing, but that there has to be a ton of drawings in between those two drawings to make it flow and to animate it. And that's what these women are doing.
Sure. Well, to be clear, there were certainly men as in-betweeners working. But then, for example, on Bambi, the in-betweeners couldn't get the legs steady enough on the deer. They're such narrow, little, fine-lined legs. The legs were wobbling if the anchors were following what the in-betweeners were doing. So they finally just said, you know, let us do it. And so every deer that you see on Bambi, the women were in-betweening directly onto celluloid with ink. No erasers, no pencils, no redrawn. They were going straight on. They were in-betweening literally in the course of production. And there were so many different advancements from types of paints and developments to visual effects, special materials and mediums. For example, in Fantasia, much of that beautiful artistry is achieved through a chalk pastel technique. And Mary Weiser and her teams developed a spray adherent, a clear adherent that would not be detected, to permit the chalk pastel to adhere to celluloid. Now, if you've worked with chalk pastel, it goes everywhere, but where you want it to. And Mary and her teams developed this, all women chemists, by the way. This was not Betty Crocker's kitchen. This was Madame Curie's lab.
Yeah.
These women were developing so many incredible formulas. And in that ability to adhere the chalk pastel, then women artists such as Millicent Patrick or Mildred Rossi at the time. Millicent is interesting. She was a Chouinard Art Institute grad, and she actually was the first female animator at Disney Studios. Many think it was Retta Scott, who was the first to get a credit as an animator. But Mildred, or Millicent Patrick later, as she changed her name, was the first woman animator there at the studio and working particularly in color animation, which is a term that was legitimate at the time and was sadly a technique that was not applied beyond Fantasia, maybe in a few other minor instances, because it was very time-consuming and labor-costly. But she did all of the, she and a couple of other women did the Toccata and Fugue sequence in Fantasia. And most notably, it's a tour de force. Rewatch The Night on Bald Mountain.
Oh, I love that.
or Fantasia.
Yeah.
All of those ghostly figures that swoop by is a Mildred Patrick's work. She also did the lighting effects on Chernabog. Walt wanted this creature of darkness to be defeated by light. And it's through Mary Weiser's technique and Mildred's chalk pastel artistry, her color animation. You will never see that sequence the same way after you know the artistry of what went into it at the hands of women.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Mindy Johnson, award-winning author and historian, filmmaker, educator, musician. I have to ask you, what kind of musician?
I'm a harpist.
What? That totally makes sense. And we're talking about her books, Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney's Animation, and Disney's Pencils, Pens, and Brushes, A Great Girl's Guide to Disney Animation. I want to talk about what life was like in the ink and paint department, because really they were off. They were off in this sort of their own. They were sort of slaving away in this animation, making these animations beautiful and making them what Disney is renowned for. But they're in this incredible building initially that didn't have air conditioning.
Right. As they began in the early 1930s, there were so many. In the height of the summer, they almost had to shut down production at times because it was sticking to the cells and the paint wasn't drying. Weather and humidity and climate and tech had a tremendous effect on the paint, which again was partly why Mary decided, look, we can fix this in some way. They were working from paints off the shelf that wouldn't blend together properly or hold suspension. So they were having a challenge trying to get the colors that they wanted for each character. So it was a bit challenging, and in 1935, at the Hyperion Studios, Walt built a brand new inking and painting building, and it was state of the art. They had big, beautiful natural light windows from each corridor, with little bay window areas in the center, so that every corridor could be working from natural light as much as possible. And it was one of the earliest buildings on the West Coast to have an early form of air conditioning. When they moved to the Burbank studios, then again, everything was creme de la creme, state of the art. And the women were really working in, they called it the country club or the resort, because it really was one of the finest areas to be doing this type of artistry. Now, that also lent itself to this myth that women were separated and locked away and couldn't go anywhere or do anything, and everything was forbidden. That's a myth. Really, the point was that, first of all, Walt wanted a comfortable environment for the women to work in, but largely because this is the last area of production where this is going to camera. So it had to be dirt-free and pristine. In fact, when you walked into the buildings, particularly through ink and paint passing into camera, there would be sort of a cheap thrill, but a big air vent would pump air up so your skirt would blow up a little bit. But it was designed to shake off the dust from your shoes so that none of this would end up infiltrating the artwork, because a little speck of anything or a hair or a fingerprint would show up like a giant boulder or effect, and it would have to be redone. The checking departments would be looking for these kinds of things, but it would delay production, and it would mar the look of the final image when you're projecting it on a 40-foot screen.
I want to talk about life. One of the things that the photography that you compiled for this book, there are times when there seems to have been a lot of camaraderie and a lot of friendships made in this department. There was a thing called tea timing that Walt instituted, where they could go out and sort of relax. And you have these incredible photographs of them just sort of in some downtime in between this intense work. And I love those photographs because they're really human. They really show the women as, you know, the individuals that they were. But it was an amazing place for them to work. In several of the interviews, women would remark that, especially during the Depression and during the war, they were happy to have a place to work.
Indeed. It was tough. Well, Depression, we tend to forget that oftentimes many of these young women were the primary breadwinners.
That's right.
Particularly during the war. I just unearthed one instance of a family. Their daughter was in high school, and the father passed away. The mother wasn't working. She had a younger brother the mother had to raise. So Ward Kimball and several others knew the family. Her uncle knew Ward, and so he helped get her portfolio together. She graduated. Everybody helped to ensure she graduated from high school, and she brought her portfolio in. She was hired on the spot. A wonderful artist. Her name was Betty Smith. And she became the breadwinner for her mother and younger brother in order to keep house and home together. And she then went on and, after getting married, continued animating. She worked away from a painting, then into inking, and was one of the first women at Disney Studios who was trained in 1940 from inking and painting to animation. Walt saw what was happening with the war over in Europe at that time and began to train the women, took the finest inkers who were premium inkers in their own right, and then trained them for animation. And Betty went on and continued animating over at Warner Brothers for many years. And it's a real incredible story about, we had widows from the war who, you know, needed to keep their young families going, and so finding work, and particularly work roles were very limited for women, and to be able to find work in an area artistically that was creative and challenging was pretty unique. And many of the women felt they'd won the lottery in a lot of ways, because it was very competitive. And as you mentioned, lifelong friendships.
Oh, yeah. Children,
families being raised together, I think was one of the biggest joys of finding many of these families of the women. They would hand me banker's boxes saying, please tell our mother's story. And you'd be going through love letters and photo albums and parties and events and, you know, just the up times and the down times. They were always there together. It's a very, very unique and special place to be working.
There are so many people, individuals, in your book. I want to talk about one that's just one of my heroes, Mary Blair. Mary Blair's use of color. Today, even as an adult, I just found enchanting. Can we talk about Mary Blair? She, from early on, she traveled with Walt to his big South America trip.
Yes. In fact, she had worked at the studio prior to that. It was the Depression. She and her husband, Lee, realized that fine artistry was not selling all that well at the height of the Depression. So they found work in the studios, and she had been doing some early development work. And when you look at these pieces, her colors are fascinating, her early watercolors, but they're very moody, very surprising. It's almost like two different artists when you see her earlier work versus her later work. And that South America trip was pivotal, transitional for her. Transformative for her, just the opening herself up to these various cultures and worlds and sights and sounds and smells, I think is the best thing for any artist. She is one of the greatest examples of the impact that travel in other cultures and diversity can have on an artist.
And out of that trip came two big animations, Saludos Amigos, which was an animation done for the Latin American audience, and The Three Caballeros, which is a really famous animation. And Mary Blair went on, she not only did she do animation, she illustrated children's books, she did all sorts of other stuff, but her heart was always in animation.
Well, indeed, she redefined the art form, and she kind of paid a bit of a price. It was not an easy thing for her. She was oftentimes one of the few women. There were other women working in concept and development right along with her, actually. So one of the other really great, phenomenal discoveries in the course of researching for Ink and Paint was that women were indeed virtually everywhere, and far many more than what we thought. So Mary was not quite as isolated as we might think, but yet it was still a challenge. She was still never fully accepted. There were a lot of the male artists were very insecure and threatened by her. Walt really saw her artistry, loved her work, and wanted more of that on the screen. I think the only real strong example we get of her style and color is Once Upon a Winter Time.
That's right.
And she, one of the shorts that she did and art directed, but her influence is present in many, many other films, from So Dear to My Heart and then, of course, the great classics in the 1950s from the Cinderella, which helped save the studio, and Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland, of course, just that vibrancy with definitely Mary. She worked closely with the women of the Inca Paint Labs, particularly in the paint labs, getting the colors right to the vibrancy that she wanted.
We're completely out of time. We're completely out of time, Mindy.
Oh, we can go for days here with this.
I honestly have just begun to talk to you because there's women in every aspect, and you talk about this in your book. Who did the voice of Minnie Mouse? Who built the first reference library? Then we didn't even talk about Nelbert Schoenard's art school, which becomes CalArts. It's all in these books, and they are so. I strongly recommend them. We've been talking with Mindy Johnson tonight, award-winning author and historian, filmmaker, educator, and musician. And we're talking about her books, Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney's Animation, which just is a gorgeous, huge book that you're going to be tempted to put on your coffee table, but please read it because there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. And a younger person's book, which is also very can be enjoyed by adults, Disney Pencils, Pens, and Brushes, A Great Girl's Guide to Disney Animation. Mindy, it's been a real pleasure.
Mark, thank you. A great joy as well.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.